just take more time to properly do a motion. So it'll be on a further, probably the next meeting.
Yeah, I'm going to be on the next agenda meeting.
Just so you know what our process is. Okay, next on the agenda is conditional use number 2598, TPE DE SU 245 LLC.
Thank you. Madam Chair, you'll notice that the next five items are all from the same applicant, but they're different locations. So we grouped them together and brought them to you as a package. So the first one is conditional use number 2598, which is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for solar arrays to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 67.23 acres, more or less. The property is lying on the southeast side of County Seat Highway, which is Route 9, approximately 0.35 miles southwest from Little Street, which is Sussex County Route 469. The 911 address is 2276 East Trap Pond Road, Georgetown, and the tax parcel ID is District 135, map 19, parcel 43.00. Submitted into the record, we have the applicant's presentation materials and exhibit booklet. We have a copy of the applicant's conditional use site plan. We have a copy of the staff analysis report. We have a copy of a letter received from the Sussex County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division. We have a copy of the DelDOT service level evaluation response letter. We have a copy of a legal description for the property. And we have a copy of one written comment, which has been included in your paperless packet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whitehouse. You're going to be yelling at me, Mr. Robertson. Okay, who's representing this application today?
And as they're walking up, we've talked with the applicants because they all are the same applicants. I understand the plan is that they're going to give the entire presentation, including the general background on solar arrays, as part of the first one, and then that will be incorporated so they don't have to say the same thing five times and then deal with each specific site-specific application.
Separately. Okay, thank you.
Each one will be a separate public hearing, but the record will be incorporated into the following.
And we appreciate them being combined. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Well, good evening, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is John Falkowski. I'm a civil engineer with Becker Morgan Group, 309 South Governors Avenue, Dover, Delaware. Here tonight with Mr. Jordan Belknap from Turning Point Energy and other members of the Turning Point Energy development team, and Mr. John Tracy, legal counsel for the project. As Mr. Robertson noted, we will bring the testimony forward from Jordan's testimony, as well as some common features between the solar projects related to landscaping and fencing and that sort of things that we would like to have discussion on during the TPE DE SU 245 project and carry that as testimony through the other projects as well. If you wouldn't mind bringing up the Turning Point slides, there was just intro slides. I'll ask that Jordan come up, tell you a little bit about Turning Point Energy, who they are, a little bit about the community solar project, and then he'll turn it back over to me and I'll go over the specifics of the site plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Appreciate the opportunity to present to you today. I'm Jordan Belknap, Managing Director of Development for Turning Point Energy. Turning Point Energy is a renewable energy developer specializing in community solar projects. We're active in several markets across the U.S. We're also active in Sussex County. We have previously permitted six projects within the county, one actually next door in
Excuse me, sir. Can we have quiet, please? Thank you.
In the municipality of Georgetown next door. Like I said, we've been active in Sussex County. Five of those projects have achieved building permits and are in various stages of construction. The development at Turning Point is a team effort, so I'd like to introduce Kara Price and Abe Bennett, who will also be lead developers on the five projects that are coming up. John, what do I hit? Arrow key?
Should be left and right.
Okay, thank you. All right, at Turning Point Energy, we believe our projects should provide economic, environmental, and community value. So we do so by providing economic value by developing community solar projects, which allow subscribers to sign up and save money on their electric bill. These projects also represent an increase in the tax revenue to the county. They provide environmental value because we're making electricity with clean, renewable energy. And all of our projects, we add pollinator plantings around the perimeter of the solar array, which gives a nice habitat for birds and small animals. And we create community value because one of the important things that we like to do is we like to contribute to local charities and organizations for all our projects, which is really kind of a rewarding part of the job to go visit people on the ground who are doing good work in the community and be able to contribute to them. And as you can see, we're targeting $3 million of nonprofit donations for Turning Point across the company by the end of this year. Pause for a second.
Paper always works, right?
So I can follow along too. Okay, hold on, let's try it. Okay. Here we go. All right.
It's trouble on that.
It's all right. So I know you've heard this before. What is community solar? It's basically a model where we can build a larger solar farm and spread out the cost savings. It's more cost effective than going rooftop to rooftop to rooftop to get the same amount of generation. And subscribers can sign up and basically get a credit on their electric bill. So it enables homeowners who have houses that aren't well suited for solar to sign up and participate in the clean energy economy. It also enables low-income households, condominiums, mobile homes, small businesses, people who might not have a nice infrastructure to put solar panels on their roof. They can all sign up and they don't have to do anything to their infrastructure. It's purely economic model. So it provides additional benefits to the communities. I mentioned the tax benefits. This provides local jobs, engineering services, construction services, civil contractors, fencing contractors, electricians. There's a lot of disciplines that are involved in constructing a solar energy project. It also includes, it's distributed energy generation, which also helps with the electric grid. So it eases the burden of the transmission system because you're actually producing energy closer to the point where it's consumed. So the energy that the solar array backfeeds, actually physically, the electrons go into the houses and businesses nearby, and all, that energy does not have to be transmitted over the transmission grid. Like, we have the pollinator habitat. We really work with Becker Morgan to put in a nice seed mix that helps the quality of the soils as well. Okay, so I know there's been some discussion by the council about, well, we've permitted a lot of solar energy projects and we haven't really seen a lot of construction. So I just want to give you a brief update. We permitted six conditional use applications in 2023 in Sussex County, and five of them are gone to construction. So the one I'll point out, we withdrew one permit where we were working with DPL. The interconnection study took a longer time than we anticipated, and when it came back, it was actually the cost to connect that facility did not make the project feasible. So we do our best up front to analyze the grid and make sure we're putting them in perfect spots, but we don't have all the information that the utility has. So we have to submit a study, have the utility study it, and they come back and tell us what the costs and upgrades are necessary for that facility to connect. So we got five out of six, essentially, in this one. So we're moving forward. Five of them have their building permits. Most of them are really mechanically complete. The construction's complete. One is operational, and we expect the other completed construction sites to become operational this year. So one of the things we are waiting for Delmarva Power sometimes. So we don't want to be too far ahead of them because we don't want to have the infrastructure in the ground before we can flip the switch and have it generating electricity.
So that's one of the questions that I think we all have is, what is the status of the applications today with DP&L?
So we have submitted applications for all five of these projects today. And we have cost letters back for most of them, basically letting us know how much it's going to cost. And we feel confident that all five will move forward today. But we have to run these tracks kind of in parallel. We run the land use permitting path in parallel and also the interconnection path in parallel.
So does that make it connection ready?
It doesn't make it connection ready because the big component is DPL will tell us how much it's going to cost, and then later on they're going to tell us how long it's going to take them to construct their part of the equation, right? And that's really the biggest variable is the time length that it will take them to complete their work. So what you can see here, that slide kind of represents projects that we have built that they're not quite done making the infrastructure updates on their grid to allow us to connect.
So only one of them is actually in operation producing electricity on the grid now?
Correct. Yeah.
So 2 to 3 years is what we're looking at.
Yeah, and I think in fairness to DPL, okay, they got a lot of applications at the same time. Because when this community solar program opened up, developers like Turning Point and other developers went out, got site control of land. We were required, we needed site control to be able to submit the application, and then they got an influx of a lot of applications basically as soon as they opened the program.
We've seen those too.
Yeah. So they had a lot on their plate all of the sudden.
I understand.
And they're trying to sort out and they're working through it. And they are putting their efforts in and it will get done. And we would like it to get done a little faster, obviously. Yep.
But I'm presuming that they're probably looking at a pipeline that's quadruple whatever it used to be, say, 5 years ago, right?
As far as number of projects, yeah.
At least.
I mean, that's the nature of distributed energy, right? You're going to have more projects distributed out in different areas. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
you. What do you hear about, I know this is getting a little bit farther out, but, you've got some of these that are getting closer to being online. But DP&L, I know, is feeling the crunch a little bit now from the legislature that their prices are wanting to go up, and they're trying to say no, they're not. So I know DP&L is kind of pumping the brakes on some of their projects right now because of it. Are you guys victims of that? I mean, I know you got to be hearing some of this stuff, right?
In fairness, if that's something that's proprietary or, you don't want to answer on the record, because that – Let me back up. The reason we're asking these questions is because we're seeing an influx of these, and frankly, the county's trying to get a handle on the process, and it seems like we're all a little bit, trying to sort out what comes first, including you all, because we're looking at approving projects that may or may not, get built, because you all are, frankly, further along than I think some that we see in terms of in the pipeline with DP&L and following that application process. But we're trying to learn how many of these, and not just yours, all of them are actually going to be built, because there's a lot of solar projects and, trying to get a handle on which ones are actually viable and trying to learn the process of it and how it works with DP&L and, so frankly, this information actually is really helpful to see.
And then some of the conditions that we're requiring. And are they right or are they wrong? We don't know what we don't know.
Because you can't see them yet. Right.
But knowing that this is on the record and that you've got, partnerships with DPL, you can answer that however you choose.
What I can say really is, we don't want to be here permitting projects that, don't have a high probability of going forward. We don't want to, spend our capital on that or waste your time, our time.
Right.
So we... As part of our business, we make it our business to know as much as we can about the electric grid when we're applying for a project, okay? And we do pre-applications, and we have engineers who analyze this, okay? But ultimately, the process is you do pay DPL to do the study, to have them come back and say, you can connect it. They always say you can connect it, but, here's what it will take. And so we need to make sure here's what it will take as a manageable thing for the project, okay? As far as the number of projects you have,
Can I ask a question on that? Just again, the general one, just again, part of the learning experience. Will DP&L give you that response if there's not a land use approval in place? In other words, do you need to come through the county to get that?
That's a great request.
Cost estimate.
No. No. We need to proof of site control to apply for an interconnection application. But we need to go ask the county for a permit, because at some point down the line, DPL is going to ask us to pay a large sum of money to connect the facility. And we don't want to do that unless we have a land use permit.
Right.
So that's why we run them in parallel.
So, but they will give you the estimate on the connection costs and infrastructure costs before, or regardless of whether you have a county.
Regardless. Okay. Because we're paying for a study.
Yeah.
So we pay for the.
So it's no out of pocket to them.
We're hiring them to produce something.
Yeah. But they don't give you an estimate on time, I assume, right?
Well, first they give us an estimate on cost, and then the next step is like the interconnection agreement. That's really the signed document that says you can backfeed the power at this location.
Okay.
And when they produce that for us, they give us a construction schedule and time.
I'm just wondering, like, you know, I don't think I've ever seen this happen. I hope it never would, but you have your construction 3/4 of the way done, and then there's like no foreseeable future.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got that investment already put out there or almost finished, and then there's
I think that's what he just said too, that they don't want to do
we
that.
Don't,
right.
We,
I get
we
you
wanna
don't want to do that,
we
but I don't
want to avoid that situation.
Out.
And, you know, we have projects, they're close, they're going to get connected, they're going to get operational. But, you know, we try to time it at the same time, and sometimes there's further delay.
Yeah.
Okay. But in fairness, there's a lot for the power company to do. They've got to keep the lights on. They've got to go on storm duty. I mean, they have other things to do as well and other responsibilities. So we try to work with them, but this is the reality of the situation. And I think, you know, so I think that's a big component of why we have a lot of permits and haven't seen a lot built. And I can't, you know, there may be other projects that were more speculative. I don't know. We just try to.
We feel like we get caught between the horse and the cart, like which one goes first sometimes. Because
I think for us, we kind of have to do both in a parallel track. And that's why. So just one more update on those projects. So while those are getting built, I mean, we're actively going out and getting subscribers for the project. So this is an ongoing process. For these Sussex County projects, we've got almost 3,000 households and small businesses signed up.
And those are Sussex County residents?
Those are not all Sussex County residents. Those are customers of DPL, because that's who's allowed to participate in the program, okay? But there are a lot of Sussex County residents within that, but it's not entirely the case. But 50% of the projects are going to low-income housing as well, which get an additional benefit on their electricity. And the projected cost savings of the people we've signed up so far, if you map in their current savings and projections of what electricity rates are supposed to do, is like $19 million for these projects. So that's my opening and just general, you know, update on our projects. And I'll turn it back over to John so he can walk you through the next.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan. And Mr. Whitehouse, if you wouldn't mind pulling up the other PowerPoint slide. Thank you, Jordan. I think that was super helpful. Just additional information for the commission. It's been a lot of questions in previous applications, and hopefully that was clears a few things up. This is actually the one right down the street, one of the built projects that we were talking about in Georgetown. This is SU-113, shown here on the cover slide. So SU-245, this is located also in Georgetown, not far from here, located between Route 9 and East Trap Pond Road. The parcel is zoned AR1. It's an existing agricultural use, and you can see the different colors here. You have the, thought it was red, but it's shown up pink on this plan. The pink line is the conditional use area of 25.96 acres. The green dashed line within that area is the fenced area, and that is 19.48 acres. And then the total parcel area, you can see this wooded area in the back and some of the farming activities that will remain. That's surrounded by this cyan colored line. That total parcel acreage is 67.23. So just a colorized version of the site plan that was submitted. This shows the solar array. It shows access off Route 9 through a parcel that is controlled by the same property owner. That gravel road would come straight down through the middle of the site and extend the road to the inverters that are centrally located in the solar array field. So you'll see on this plan this green hatched buffer area here. That is the landscape buffer that we show to the right. And I have a few slides on this. Right now, the plans that are submitted before you, they have the 30-foot wide landscape buffer that consists of a 70-30 mix, 70 deciduous, 30 evergreen, and it's 15 trees essentially per 100 feet. That's the county standard. It's based on the subdivision buffer. A little bit more on the fencing. I know in some previous applications there was something called a fixed knot wire fence. And what does that look like? We've developed a detail that you see here that'll be on all the final site plans. And this photo on the bottom left is what that fence actually looks like. It's a 12 and a half gauge mesh wire that's fully taut with tension wires and wooden posts that get driven into the ground. So that's what the fence itself looks like. Then we have a fabric, and we've been working on this throughout the years. This is a mesh fabric that does allow some wind to pass through. So we found a product that is not solid like you would see on a tennis court or a baseball outfield fence or something like that. This would actually allow, it's kind of got a mix of the nylon, the density of the nylon. So you get a strip of, you know, really thick, opaque, and a strip of, you know, less opaque, and it still provides the opacity, 70% opacity, but allows more wind to pass through this mesh.
So if it allows the wind to pass through easier, does that mean there's less, is it more tolerant to stay on the fence? Because we're seeing some of that happening already.
So this is in reaction to that.
Okay.
I think some contractors, we don't have one. We have SU-75 that's in construction. That is one of the first ones that'll be this fence with a mesh on it. And then we've done other things to that to, I think, some contractors for maybe the ones you were speaking of. They were getting installed with plastic zip ties and that sort of thing. And so we've beefed up the straps to a stainless strap and then did a tension wire top and bottom, and this attaches to that. And then the wind, you know, the different densities of the nylon fabric will help with the wind, as well as wind cutouts, like little oval cutouts every 100 feet. And we believe that'll help with the high wind events, you know, in a farm field. So this is a typical, I'll call it typical rendering graphic of what the buffer looks like with the mesh screening. You can see the canopy trees. It's, you know, mostly canopy trees. This is a typical 100-foot linear foot section, which consists of 10 deciduous trees and 5 evergreens. That is the current standard, although in discussions in other applications, we would actually propose to either do a full evergreen or even reverse the mix where it was a 70% evergreen, 30% deciduous, which would end up being then 10 evergreen trees and 5 canopy trees. We're open to whatever you suggest. The plans currently show the current standard that final site plans have been approved with, but certainly would appreciate any consideration to, we think, an evergreen screening might provide a little bit better visual screening in the winter months when the canopy trees will lose their leaves. And additionally, on the mesh fabric, we have been talking a little bit about its lifespan. What we would also propose would be to have the mesh on the fence, but at a point when the vegetation is established, say at 5 years or when the bond is released, that we could remove the mesh. The idea is that if you have a thicker evergreen buffer of 10 trees, once that's established in say 5 years, you can remove the mesh and then it wouldn't become a long-term maintenance problem. And then within that 5 years, the operator of the facility would make periodic visits, make sure the mesh isn't coming down, repair it as necessary. But we would request your consideration of that condition. Just a brief graphic on noise. We have one for each of the applications. So we've, you know, we have a tool that can evaluate the decibel level at the property line or at the houses. And so we do meet all applicable buffers with this project and all other applications. But you can see we're well in excess of the 200 feet on every one of them. The closest one on this project is 275 feet, which with 28 inverters, and we have spec sheets on the low noise that they produce at the property line, they would be 44 decibels, which is as quiet as a library or maybe even this quarters here. So we did include a slide for each of the projects to show you how low the decibel rating would be at each property line and residence. Just back to the site plan. You have heard some of the general conditions before, but you know these will be fully reviewed and approved by the Conservation District. One of the things that Jordan spoke about with the pollinators is it's a meadow grass. It's called Fuzz and Buzz from the Ernst Seed Company that has done fairly well in this area. And so the thought is all the row crops or cover crop, whatever is there, will be planted underneath the array with the meadow grass as well as within the buffer area. So that will all grow up. It'll be maintained yearly, usually cut down once to twice a year to keep it at a manageable height, but that those pollinators grow in and actually help with reduced runoff for, say, a farm field with a row crop condition. And actually, the way the Conservation District looks at it, it is a decrease in runoff to the adjacent areas. So again, just a project overview and some additional design parameters. As Jordan said, this does benefit the local residential business and municipality subscribers. It is all Delmarva Power subscribers, important note. They don't increase traffic like a typical development project, you know, 1 to 2 visits per month, you know, early on, as it's established and things are working great, that might be increased, you know, to once every few months. There is a sign at the front of each project that will have the developer's name and phone number for direct contact. So hopefully they would call that number and not the county should they have any mesh screening that needed repair or a tree fell over or that sort of thing. So fully accessible for maintenance. This is a renewable energy source, which produces no odors, dust, gas, smoke, or fumes. Little to no noise from the inverters, and we did provide that test at the property line. Again, the pollinator-friendly ground cover plantings will reduce runoff, and those plans will be reviewed and approved by the Conservation District. Do have that 30-foot wide landscape buffer. Again, that and the fence fully supportive of maybe an evergreen or the reverse 70-30 mix, whatever the commission feels appropriate. And the fencing with the, it does have a Knox box located at the gate, and that provides the emergency access for personnel. So the gravel road that I pointed to that goes to the center of the site, the fire marshal requires that road to be a minimum of 14 foot wide. And as we look at it, we may make it wider for access. It's really only for maintenance vehicle traffic, so it doesn't need to be very wide. But the fire marshal will require 14 foot wide with a turnaround at the end for any apparatus and a Knox box for access to it. The projects will be decommissioned at the end of their life, and the security bond will be put in place as part of the conditions. And then as with all five of the applications here before you tonight, everyone has had a community hearing. This one was held at the Georgetown Library on May 19th. So the meetings went well. You'll hear in some of the applications ahead of this one, actually changes were made that came out of the community meeting. Plan changes have been made as a result of their input. So we'll go over those.
How do you advertise for those? Send letters to the nearby residents?
The same mailing list that goes out, we contact them directly.
Okay, thank you.
Just a general project summary, and I will, just a reminder, we would like to include these slides for
yes.
All applications, so we don't have to go through them on everyone.
Appreciate that.
Some are tongue twisters. The first one being that the facility is a public utility use under Sussex County Zoning Code and meets the purposes of a conditional use in that it is of public or semi-public character and that it is essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare of Sussex County residents. The proposed facility promotes Goal 7.3 of the comp plan, which encourages the use of renewable energy, such as the solar arrays. It will not adversely impact any of the neighboring or adjacent properties and provides the landscaping and fencing, as we discussed. Again, if changes need to be made, I'm fully supportive of that. Will not increase traffic to any adjacent properties or neighboring roadways, and that there will be periodic maintenance on the site for repairs and maintenance. There is no noise, dust, or odor generated by the facility. And the project is compliant with the buffers and setbacks set forth in Ordinance 2920. And as Jordan mentioned, interconnection studies for all of them, except one you'll see wasn't required because it's directly adjacent to a substation. But all interconnection studies have been done, the costs are known, and it's been economically de-risked, essentially, to move forward. I believe that is it. So happy to take any questions.
All right. Thank you, sir. We'll see if anyone has any questions. We'll start with Mr. Passwaters.
Nothing really quick. Excuse me. Not any questions, but I appreciate the effort of you guys being willing to change the landscape buffer with the trees, more evergreens versus deciduous, as it has been something we've discussed in previous public hearings. So thank you to you guys for being willing to do that.
Is it your opinion that the 5 years would be enough time for growth to consider taking the woven?
I think in 5 years, if we get the initial install tree large enough, it would be. But I think anything below 8 foot, no, you got to wait at least 10 years.
Okay.
Because these trees are not going to be watered. Mm. So there's nothing that's going to enhance them to growth that you may see if it was in your typical yard.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anything else?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Mr. Collins?
No questions for me. Thank you.
Mr. Pettijohn?
I just had one thinking about the tree thing. I know a popular tree for shielding or viewing is like Leland cypress. This is actually more for you, Jonathan, but or maybe it's for both. But I know they have a lifespan, and a lot of times they go, and then, is that something that don't recommend that kind
of? 25 to 35 year land lease is pretty much what typical they're doing. They'll be fine. Obviously, Leland cypress with heavy weight on them, like we had heavy snow like we did this winter, could cause damage, obviously, but that's Mother Nature. But one thing I would say in the buffer is the staking, making sure that they are properly staked and tied, because that does become a nuisance and a sore eye to the community as you're passing by.
No, that was the only question I had, but thank you.
Okay. Mr. Robertson or Mr. Whitehouse, do you have any questions?
None for me, thanks.
None for me, thank you. Okay. In terms of the Leyland cypress species, there are perhaps better species to use, but that are evergreen species, like holly is a year-round evergreen tree, for example, just to more compatible with our landscaping plans of the county.
There you go.
Absolutely. 100% agree with that.
All right, thank you.
No Bradford pears. No.
Or olive trees.
I'm good with the holly tree. Okay. All right. Thank you for your presentation. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of conditional use number 2598 TPEDESU245? Oh, come right on up.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to go. My name is Judson Malone. I live here in Georgetown. I'm the executive director of Springboard Delaware, a nonprofit dedicated to housing stability. And I'm here in strong support of the five TPE projects collectively. I wanna make a point that was in the project summary. I wanna speak to the semi-public benefit, essential and desirable to the residents of the county. I'll begin with the lowest income neighbors. For two decades, rents have climbed faster than incomes, and the gap has become a chasm. Today, a worker needs to earn roughly $32 an hour about $66,000 a year just to afford a modest two-bedroom without being cost-burdened. There is no county in America where a full-time minimum wage can cover that rent. The result of that is roughly 3 out of 4 extremely low-income renters are severely cost-burdened, paying more than half of every dollar they earn just to keep a roof overhead. When 50% of your income goes to housing, there is nothing left to absorb a shock. And the utility bill is one of the most relentless shocks there is. For these families, the power bill is not a line item. It is a monthly choice between electricity and groceries, between staying current and falling behind. Community Solar speaks directly to that pressure. A subscription to these projects lets a household tap clean, locally generated power and see a guaranteed or approximate 10% reduction on their electric bill with no rooftop, no upfront costs, no credit barrier, no behind the meter expense to get those benefits. A severely burdened family, 10% is not abstract. It's heat kept on through the winter. It's a late notice that never arrives. It's a small but real loosening of the vise. And the benefit stays local. Every dollar a family keeps is spent here in our community, not sent to distant fuel markets. Together, these five projects strengthen our grid, advance our clean energy goals, and deliver the most direct relief to the people who need it. This is the rare set of proposals where the environmental case and the equity case point in the same direction. Community Solar lowers emissions and lowers bills. I urge you to approve all five projects. They're good for our climate, good for our grid, and good for the neighbors who can least afford to be left behind. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Does anyone else like to speak in favor?
Just if I could ask the gentleman a question, can we incorporate, or is it your intention that we incorporate that statement on all five here?
It is my intent.
Okay, so you don't have to say it each five. Yeah, if you would, that'd be great for Mr. Whitehouse's benefit and staff's as well.
Great, yeah. Thank you very much. Okay, is there anyone else like to speak in favor? Is there anyone here who would like to speak in opposition? Okay, there being none. Let's see, Mr. Passwaters, what's your pleasure? I'll close the public hearing, for conditional use number 2598.
Madam Chair, I move that we defer conditional use 2598 TPDE SU 245 LLC for the conditional use.
Okay. Thank you. The motion's been made and seconded to defer action on conditional use number 2598 TPEDE SU 245. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The motion carries.